Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Friday's a split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. Saturday, join a phase Anna and Babylon as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And Monday is a split between The Hearts of L&T with Victoria Frost and Black Lace Dyes with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. These shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions, tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Good evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. What's up?
Not much. It's quiet.
Yeah, quiet. Quiet is good. Sometimes.
Oh. Yeah, it's not been quiet around here lately. Got two new red-tailed hawkers running around with their parents. They're kept it loud here during the day as they screech across everything.
Oh, I bet. I bet. Yeah, they are very communicative, that's for sure. The noisiest things I have around here are I have a neighbor, not even really a neighbor, but, you know, a couple miles down the road, who has multiple chickens and multiple roosters, and those roosters are just always going off. But
yummy.
Mm-hmm.
Considering, mm-hmm. I think eggs are up to $5 a dozen. So it does look like they might be going to an even $12 a dozen very soon.
It's ridiculous. Honestly, I have seriously thought about investing in a couple of chickens, but I have a feeling that everybody has that idea right now. So, but yeah, chickens, geese, anyway.
The supply store right at the beginning of spring, where they bring in chicks of all flavors to purchase.
Yeah. A lot of our hardware stores and, you know, pet supply stores, stuff like that, do come in with the chicks right around this time, I think. So, I know. But last time I got a chick, somebody told me it was a hen, a little baby hen, and it wasn't. It was an annoying little rooster. So, didn't get any eggs, just the attitude. But those red-tail hawks, well, you know, the thing is any, I know it isn't predator. What are the hunting birds called, like hawks and eagles?
Falconers?
I'm not sure if that's the word I'm looking for, but that works. You know, they're so graceful in their movements. I mean, I like watching birds of any type. We get all kinds of little birds. My daughter and I, Nessa, we set up a bird feeder, and we get all kinds of cute little songbirds. But there's such a kind of an elegance and grace when it comes to, like, the eagles and the hawks. And that, you know, are able to just glide on the wind.
That's pretty cool. Got a nice big old, about 10 acres of woods next door. So between my trees and those trees out there, they've got a nice home to play with and a long range of things to dip into.
Oh, very cool. And do you still got your hoot owl at nighttime?
The barred, yep.
Oh, the barred owl, sorry. I don't know why that was a hoot. Is a hoot owl even a thing? Or is that just
the only thing? Yeah, they do hoot, but you got to remember the barred owl is different because it offers up a a different tone, that it is usually remembered as "See You All." That's the tone of their call.
I like that. I like that. But yeah, I know obviously different birds and even different owls have different tones, but I couldn't remember. Like I know that the hoot was like the generic term, but I couldn't remember if there was actually an owl called the hoot owl. Now, do you actually have a barn, or is it a barn owl or a barred owl?
Barred, B-A-R-R-E-D.
Oh, okay, that's different. That's different than a barn owl. So you don't actually have a barn, do you?
Nope.
No, me neither. I have a a chicken coop. So that works if I ever need chickens.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be eggs were the guaranteed cheap source of protein.
Yeah.
But that's not. Huh?
Eggs are still a good source of protein.
Well, I just meant, no, I mean, they're a source of protein, but what I'm saying is they're not as cheap as they used to be. It used to be like a good cheap source of protein.
Yeah, at $1.20 a dozen, they used to be good just fine.
Absolutely. And so now I'm going to be digging in the mud for grubs for dinner. And grubs and soybeans, that's what I'm going to be eating, Rex.
Don't forget the you can dig in those mounds and get out termite larvae. They're good too.
Tasty. What is that? The Lion King? Oh yeah, slimy and satisfying.
That would be fun.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, yeah. But so Bukowski, always a great choice. Never have to introduce him to people. Yeah, ran a pre-write contest and for 25 entries, and it filled up in less than 24 hours.
Yep.
And I'm definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry. So, shall we go ahead and get this party started? All right. Sounds good to me. All right. Here we go. Up first, we have Blame It on Bukowski by Oak Blue 34. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Blame It on Bukowski, Oak Blue 34. Dawn broke, which reminded me to drink a stout glass of brew, coffee that is, Colombian blend, which means part something else was thrown in as filler, which got me thinking about pie, apple, she of my eye, which can hardly focus these days in the haze of city life full of discombobulation, a word I wanted to use for some time, which I am wasting by the second on this poem, all because of something that quit or genius much the same said years ago about writing being a photograph, a picture that in your esophagus, churning images of misshaped waffles, trying to decide if it should be a cheese omelet with bacon, something to pig out on, as you feast in the slop of someone else's well-manicured imagination. And he ran with a quote, though, in my work as a writer, I only photograph in words what I see. All right. What would you say?
I like this. I thought it was a great reflection of the chosen prompt. And he did very much stick with the style of Bukowski in that he stuck with his area around him, what he could see around him or what was, you know, in his head, and really did a great job of creating a photograph with words. I smiled at the rhyme, a city life full of discombobulation, a word I've wanted to see used for some time, which I was wasting. I am wasting by the second on this poem. We all have those words. And I could definitely see discombobulation being one of those that you want to use. I like that, you know, he mentions a stout glass of brew, which immediately throws you off, you know, thinking, you know, that he's talking about beer, but he says coffee, that is Colombian blend, which means part something else was thrown in as filler, which got me thinking about pies, apples, TMI. Wonderful play with words, wonderful way of flowing from one thought to the next. I really liked this all the way through. And the one other part I'd like to bring up that really grabbed my attention is you said when he says, all because of something that twit or genius much the same said years ago about writing being like a photograph. I really enjoyed and appreciated how he gave that nod to Bukowski, but also to people who have read Bukowski, because let's face it, there are people who absolutely love Bukowski's style. They love the edginess. They love the rawness. They love the straightforward language. And there are those who honestly barely consider him a poet. So the fact that he says that twit or genius, I thought was a great nod to that concept of love Bukowski or hate Bukowski. And so just an excellent write.
Well said. I do like that opening and the stout glass of brew, coffee that is Colombian blend, but it kind of stout glass of brew kind of walks back to evening because it wasn't broke, which reminded me to drink. So it's either hair of the dog because of the last night before or the coffee to actually get the blood pumping once again. But I forgot the, which got me thinking about pies, apple, she of my eye, which can hardly focus these days. I mean, the focus, again, goes back to the need for the coffee the night before. And the thought about pies kind of walks in that the disreputable side of them. Apple, she of my eye, just the thought of the angles of the words themselves. Discombobulation, a word I've wanted to use sometime, which I'm wasting by the second on this poem. All because it's something that twit or genius, much the same. He's offering up that note, hey, whether twit or genius, they walk the same level in a way. And the idea of writing being like a photograph, picture that in your esophagus, kind of the thought of chewing on those the words produced by that photograph, so to speak. And again, should be a cheese omelet, bacon, something to pig out on. Is there worth within the words themselves? As you feast on a slop of someone else's well-manicured imagination. Again, a feast on a slop of it kind of runs back right again to that the pies, apple, she of my eye, as dipping into sloppy seconds, so to speak. So Oak kind of ran the gamut of thought with Buke on this one.
Absolutely. And I like that thought you shared there, the whole thought, but I like where you said, you know, the idea of sloppy seconds the idea of chewing on the picture that the photograph that around you and to bring it out as a poem. So very cool.
All right.
Up next we have In Chosen Company by T. Michelle, and it goes like this. What do I tell you? Life's silhouette is white and fair, or there's an angel for many mouths. Something vile came from miles away, ragged, vicious tremor, pretending it wasn't dead, a live mannequin, gaping hole in my chest, torn by laborious fingers. I tried to suture with bicolored chrysanthemums, the best of anything. Thus began the frantic search for people and feelings to fill the vacuum that time seemed to ignore to no avail. I traversed light years, flew alongside merciless hawks, swam to ocean's end, crawled through black swamps in uncharted rainforests, invaded caveman dreams for Neanderthals to fund, blue blood, but none were there. I heard the sound of harsh days moving through trees, through the fog. Southward they trailed tirelessly. So I boarded a train to self-awareness. There the toast were crispy, scrambled eggs were hot, and coffee was free. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. And the prompt for that one was Consummation of Grief by Duke. It's kind of a blue note in this with the voice and language. Vicious tremor, pretending more than dead, live mannequin. I kind of hit on the nose of a hollow existence, gaping hole in my chest, laborious fingers, ripping out that angle of or sense of self with the heart, just so you don't have to feel that which is. And then a frantic search for people and feelings to fill the vacuum that time seems to ignore to no avail. Again, that hollowness rings out, and now there's that note of wanting the company and that which comes with the company, the vein of pain, the vein of happiness, joy, and everything else comes with it. And I like the back end of this with the thought of flying with the merciless hawk, the swimming the ocean sense, the swamps, the cavemen, the dreams, Neanderthals. And then that thought with the harsh days moving through trees, through the fog, southward they trailed tirelessly. There's that almost a note there to flying south for the winter, so to speak. And then that last stanza, boarding a train to self-awareness. There's almost a note of, yeah, like I'm really going there. It might be a nice place to visit, but it doesn't offer me up that which I can put voice to. What about you?
Well, those are some really great observations that I felt covered the entire poem, but, you know, see what I can do. But I like that she opens up with the question, you know, the idea of someone, you know, saying, when did I give you the impression that life was fair? I like the... you know, as always, Team Michelle has just strong imagery and metaphors. I like how this has a sci-fi type vibe to it. And I traversed light years, flew alongside merciless hawks, swam to ocean's ends, crawled through black swamps and uncharted rainforests. I feel like, to me, this speaks on the idea of somebody looking around the world in every corner, you know, to other people, other places, and other things for contentment, for happiness. And invaded caveman dreams for Neanderthals to fund blue blood, but none were there. That kind of reminds me for some reason, and I could be wrong, but when I read those lines, I think of the idea of the proverb of don't cast pearls before swine. And I have to say that, you know, I love the use of bicolored chrysanthemums and the end stanza wrapped it up really nicely. And what I find very intriguing about the end stanza, and not that this was like, you know, this wasn't filled with like huge metaphors that, you know, I couldn't get some grasp of. You know, it was pretty straightforward language metaphorically. But I felt like all of a sudden everything came down to earth. The mind came down to earth. The heart came down to earth with, so I boarded a train to self-awareness where the toast were crispy, scrambled eggs were hot, and coffee was free. that is imagery I think anybody can relate to. And I like how she uses these common everyday experiences of the simple joys of life to represent that self-awareness. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well said. All right. Where are we going now?
Well, before we continue on, I'd like to welcome Jeremy to the show. Hello, Jeremy. How's it going?
I'm doing okay. I mean, one of my really good friends growing up, his name was Nate. He was a structural engineer, and his life goal was always to see the Hoover Dam. And this past weekend, he finally was able to go up to Vegas and see it for the first time in his life. And the thing is, he's a little bit of a drinker. So he's in Vegas, obviously. He goes up to the Hoover Dam. He's driving across, and he was drunk. And he started swerving across the dam. And a little detail that's little known about the Hoover Dam is there's this huge lever built on it in case that in case the dam ever got too full, that they could push this lever and it would kind of release the water. And so he starts careening across the dam, and his car goes off the dam and it's headed right for the lever. But if he hits the lever, obviously Vegas is going to be flooded. And then all of a sudden, these huge lasers come up, and they incinerate his car. But, I mean, I can't feel too bad because better Nate than Lever, right?
Aww.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
You
good to see you.
I don't believe you actually bought that hook, line, and sinker.
Hey, guys. Great to be here.
Because you're not allowed to actually drive across the Hoover Dam anymore.
Great to be here, guys.
Well, how would I know that? Besides, the guy was drunk. Drunk people are always, you know, in the story.
Yeah,
better Nate the Lover. Better Nate the Lover.
I get it.
All right. Well, I'm here. Good to hear
you. Jeremy, that was quite the entrance.
I got to keep Pam on her toes. I don't want her ever to be too comfortable.
Oh, you had her from the opening word because you came in so forlorn and downtrodden.
Still laughing at me being...
And you better watch your back now. I hear the dungeon chains rattling.
Hey, speaking of which, it's June, Rex. There better be some kind of Pam birthday celebration you have planned for this month. Do you have something in the works, buddy, that I need to be ready for?
Somebody might.
Somebody better be celebrating Pam on a birthday month.
Oh,
actually,
wow. You brought a whole pack of turkeys with you.
I did. I came with all.
Yeah, better get them now because you won't be able to find them later on in the year.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I can laugh about that joke, but I will tell you, Jeremy. I will tell you that were I standing in front of you, I would have punched you. Because I had tears in my eyes. I was all ready to give you all my love and support with whatever you needed.
You do realize that she's got a bear roaming her house. She's going to turn you into scat.
I'm ready.
I'm going to chop you up and feed you to the bear. Oh, and by the way, if you're interested, Dexter... Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey, is running a contest for Double Helix, the show on the 16th of June, which they're asking people to write for moi.
There it is. That's what I'm looking for. That's your birthday? Okay, as long as I haven't missed it yet.
Yeah, but that isn't an after midnight show. So, you know, if you can't make it and you want to read something like on an after midnight show or something, that's fine.
We'll figure out some way to celebrate you right, Pam. Don't worry.
All right. Rich. Are we ready to go on to the next poem?
Yep.
All right. And up next we have Don't Dare Ask by Greg Gall. And Jeremy, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Don't Dare Ask by Greg Gall. We had no hand in this rape of nature, yet we will bear its full weight and measure. Can climate be sentenced to certain doom? Is there time to resolve its gruesome gloom? Don't ask us to deny climate change. We dug a hole we can't get out of at the climate mercy from high above. Self-interest trumps the collective good. Tell the top players and do not know what they should. Do not dare ask us to think or act short term. Our little spades try digging us all out. Our designer suit dudes plow dirt around about. We dutifully sift through our own trash. We make these moguls even more cash. Don't dare ask us how to bear. Don't dare ask us how to bow to huge profits. These prominent peers, posers, poles, and priests, they had their fair say and don their least, fighting their useless battles over oil sites while they differ are on clear-cut human rights. Don't dare ask us to reject world order. Elites hold the power, that is true. Puny results from what we folks can do. As much as we'd like to see it all stop, to fix what we must begin at the top. Don't dare ask us to bear broken brokers, seeing in stores all the shiny plastic. Vast plastic globs float into the Pacific. We dive plastic cars that are half the weight by which the green fuel is still under debate. Don't dare ask to save our frail planet. Our ecosystem is interconnected, rising the tides that are all affected, and now fires and storms rage beyond this curtain. Weather is volatile and uncertain. Don't dare ask to endanger the species. Air, lands, water hope for a better day. Some of Earth's environs have lost their way. Without half our insects, we must move on. The planet's trees are forever half gone. Don't dare ask us to fix this mega mess. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. What you got?
I like the repetitiveness of don't dare ask us. I like the straightforward language, the idea that, a society makes a mess, it oftentimes starts at the top. I like the alliteration in those prominent peers, posers, Pauls, and priests. They had their fair say and done their least, fighting useless battles over oil sites while we differ on clear-cut human rights. And what else here? Here's something I can definitely agree with. Each ecosystem is interconnected. That is true. You feel like everything, in this world has a certain connection, that is there and, it represents how the earth, all the earth and depends and ourselves depend on each other. There's a real sense of, there's a real sense of the importance of taking care of the world. The planet's trees are forever half gone. I find that's an interesting fact. I'm going to have to fact check that.
What's that?
Without half our insects, we must move on. To me, those are really great points in the whole idea of how important even the smallest thing like the insect is to the ecosystem. And, you know, it feels like spoken from the heart and spoken by somebody who is just very sick and tired. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, thank you, Dan. And Jeremy, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I like the sarcasm of it all. Don't dare us to actually do something. It's kind of goading us on to actually make the change. And it's kind of funny because if you think about what has been asked of society in terms of how to help the ecosystem, what little things they can do. First of all, it was just throw all your trash, and then it was just recycle and you can solve everything. And now they're asking more and more and more of a collective of how we can be more conscious and actually make a change. And it seems like it's the opposite, and that's the sarcasm. Don't dare ask us to do a little thing that can actually do a lot. And it seems like that little thing is becoming more and more, and maybe that's what needs to be done. Maybe everyone needs to step in and do a heck of a lot more, which is obviously true. But I like the fact that you're inspired out of the sarcasm of don't dare ask us to do the littlest thing to save the one thing that is the most important, which is our home planet. So I like that. I like the attitude of it. And I think the repetition of like what Pam said really does kind of encourage that inspiration.
Excellent. I'm glad you caught that. I went with the sarcastic thought that ran within this too, because it does hit on that note, because of, what was it? Where was that one thing? Oh, bloody hell. No, not that one. Oh, man, where is it? Oh, those prominent peers, poses, poles, and priests, they had their first day and done their least, fighting useless battles over oil sites while we differ on clear-cut human rights. There is that notice. Plus, he hits that, another sort of, you got to start from the top. Yeah. The idea that it is all of those elitists who want us to keep giving up that much more to do this, that, and everything else, yet they refuse to offer up anything of worth, and they themselves will not give up that those things they expect give up. So it kind of hits on that note of you keep taking, but you aren't delivering shit. You keep wanting us to pay for this, that, and everything. Yes, the only thing that is getting done is the money's coming out of our pocket, and it's enriching y'all, and you keep telling us we got to do more. The idea of, hey, you know what? Maybe if you were doing something, we'd be sitting in a better place to begin with, because there's a whole lot of what they're doing that is impossible to begin with, because the green thought, well, that's an impossibility at this point in time, because we're tapped out in production as far as the wind and solar goes. I mean, they're only running at 48% and 42% efficiency at the moment, and that's past the top. So it ain't working yet. The freeze for winters by taking away everything else. You look at Germany, they're starting to fire up their coal plants again, looking to even fire up their nuclear plants, which have been shut down, which is one thing they shouldn't have bloody well shut down, because what we're using to make the solar panels and the wind turbines, which still need oil, first to start up and then to keep them properly machine ready, is the fact that nuclear is the cleanest energy on the planet. And the poisons that we use to make solar and the wind turbines, we have to then, because they've only got a 20-year life expectancy before we have to turn them around, and they get buried back in the earth, which then again poisons the earth. So maybe the heads of the large should get out of their asses, because there are much harder ways to do things. All right, Pam. Back to you.
All right. Great thoughts shared there, Rex. And up next, we have Prick by Mad Lad. And Rex, please give that a read.
All right. Prick by Mad Lad. Blood water.
tiny droplets form only to splatter, unwatched, with every thrash of a wet thunder oar. A boat, hemmed together out of bone, thick-set creeks, next stretch. Wood in the ferryman's fist is lightning on Zeus's palm. The emotional is mechanical, is emotional. So to permanently cure the reviving wound of pause between dreams, I announce myself as the piss marker as well as guardian, rapist of the language gutter. Only a loser takes precautions before he begins, and even the savior goddess's hairy hanging tongue requires trimming. Not every opening's an opportunity, neither all boners alarm call. Finger after finger upon finger, a fleshy creeper, canary yellow rings leaping out from the joint, thumbs its way up the curve of a semicircular mirror. A room full of masks open their mouths as violet, pink, confetti splash out in all directions. And to keep the unutterable unuttered, I insert my index into the hole in wall and feel the insides of an orange pulp moisten my skin. My bag of secrets is empty, yet the closet, outpouring, too many hues, some muffled and lined, most untouched. Belt, pool, political? A war never chooses its victims, but once it's over, I promise to plow the field, to drill all the blood out before it soaks deeper to be water to earth's accumulated oil. Every birth is unique, but the process, so similar. Inside the overused womb of a mother, a stillborn juggles three clocks in a circle, none working, to demonstrate how a future can rewrite the past, rewriting its future. An elongated gray-green locust, quick feet, enters the flower's eye, and a drop of honey trickles out. And bomb. Try that one off the side, Pam.
Me?
Okay. We'll throw it to Jeremy.
Yeah, good idea.
Uh-oh.
You're letting her off. You're letting her off.
You
that
just
easy.
Got ran over.
Wow. I mean, wow. Very cool. I want to start, since I get to go first, I'm going to steal one of Pam's signature comments. I like the mythological feel at the beginning. I feel like the River Styx and all of the idea of death and the darkness and finality at the very beginning. And that's what I was getting. And then, obviously, I mean, this thing has a lot of twists and turns. And I would like to say that I like, even though we don't have the translation in front of us, I like the fact that there is that other feeling of cultural language that is so foreign, and it creates that other layer of mystery to it. This is thick. It's a fun ride, and it definitely takes my brain in a lot of places. I think there's some sexual undertones that go along with it, but again, that overriding mythological feel is what really caught me from the beginning. I couldn't ever let go of that as we traveled through it. I like the ending of "and a drop of honey trickles out." I mean, there's a softness and there's a sinister underlying sexual feeling to it, overridden by the fact that I don't understand the language of everything that's going with it. So it's a very intriguing write, and it kind of allures. It brings me into it. I personally like poetry that has mystery to it, but the fact that I can have a feeling with a poem that I don't understand everything that's going on with it is what it's all about. It definitely evokes some kind of emotional connection, and the fact that I want to know more makes the poem that more valuable to me.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeremy. And Pam?
Great comment there, Jeremy. I tell you, and I have to agree, Mad Lad poetry always evokes an emotional response, even when you don't understand every single word. You know, I don't feel like he does sexual undertone. I feel like he takes a big old dildo and smacks you in the face with it. And there's no undertone. You know? But maybe that's just me. I really feel like there's almost like there's a war of the genders here, I feel like. A battle, you know, of the sexes, you know. The reviving wound of pause between dreams, I announce myself as the piss marker as well as guardian rapist of the language gutter. And I have to say, rapist of the language gutter, if I were to pick any line that I felt had a Bukowski connection, even though I don't see Bukowski ever coming up with that phrase, I feel like the idea of what it represents, that guttural language, that gutter language that so many people disapprove of, is a thought that Bukowski would have, but with Mad Lad's own unique way of saying it. I did like how the end, with the mention of the drop of honey, had a gentle tone to it, as you mentioned. I really, there's so much to dig into with this, and I could probably pick out every stanza and make up something that I thought it meant. My bag of secrets is empty, yet the closet's outpouring. There's so much we just keep needing to learn about each other. And every birth is unique, but the process so similar. Inside the overused womb of a mother, a stillborn juggles three clocks in a circle, none working. Such a powerful sense of loss, or a powerful sense. To me, it almost gives the idea of the worth of a woman on the idea that she created a child by a certain time in her life. You know, just a really strong and thought-provoking write, as always, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I'm going to use a movie reference, which will just about turn it into a pun. It kind of hits me with the thought of it being, it's a mad, 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 mad world. And that's the very reference point within this, because it does have the back end of hitting male and female, the thought of things being stretched beyond their normal boundaries, where there's that thought of emotional is mechanical, is emotional. Everything's emotion now instead of a creative thought and differentiation of mind and voice instead of a singularity, screaming. There was that thought. Someone was at home. A room full of masks open their mouth as violet pink confetti splash out in all directions. There is that notion right there to the thought of a virus, but there's also the thought within that the virus of the mind, where you buy into the masks and now you're spewing out the derivative qualities that come with buying into that mask. And then it's on, and to keep the unutterable unuttered, I insert my index into the hole in the wall and feel the inside of an orange pulp moisten my skin. There is a little sensual undertone to that, but the insert into the hole in the wall gives you that idea of the dike. You put your finger in one hole in the dike, another springs, and another springs, and another springs. So instead of repairing the dike in toto, you've got one singularity offering up the thought to, all right, I'll just plug this hole and we'll be okay. Yet another hole springs out. So you've got, you know, by the time you figure anything out, the guy's maybe got 10 fingers in each of the holes that are spread before him. But if they go past his outstretched arms, he's in shit because it ain't going to work. Too many hues, some muffled and lined, most untouched. There's a central note to that. I warned I would choose the victims. I promised to plow the fields, drill all the blood out before it soaks deeper to be warmed to earth's accumulated oil. Again, water and oil don't mix. I never have, but the thought of blood, which is mostly water anyway, hits on that note. But it hits on the sort of war for oil, the idea of stealing that, which is someone else's. Hey, you know what? Let them bring it out. Pay for it. Why steal it? Every birth is unique, but the process is so similar. There's a thought to too many people walking a singularity instead of their own mind. I like the thought of the overused womb of a mother, a stillborn juggle. Yeah, that kind of hits on a lot of what's going on today, this whole piece itself. The thought of can rewrite the past, rewriting its future, is an impossibility. Because once you rewrite the past, you've already destroyed the future, because without the past, you don't have a future, because you're destined to keep repeating that which sits in the past. And a drop of honey trickles out. Yeah, the sweetness of life drying up. Nicely done, Mad Lad. All right, Pam.
All right. And up next we have $1 by E.J. Cool. And it goes like this. Back in the old black and white dollar cineplex, propped up fittingly against the dim streets of a small town in rural Ohio, we sat in a compact empty theater under a cloak of cigarette fog, blissfully oblivious to fuzzy fluttering on a skew screen. My left hand softly tousled the dark curls of your hair, while my right explored below the belt of your pants, and developing firmness therein, your fingers coaxed my breast from under wire shackles and eager mouth, completed the circuit as your inquisitive digits struck gold in their discovery of wet light glaze. We put on a much better show than whatever movie was playing that night. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Jeremy, here's some sensuality you can sink your teeth into.
EJ, I know you're on the boards. You got me blushing. This is this is steamy, and it goes the whole way. And it's a buck. It's a buck to get in, and it is those times back when going to the movie theaters was still fun. I remember. So yeah, no, it's steamy as hell. And you know what I like about it is it doesn't stop. She, from the very beginning, there's no punctuation in it, and it just tells the story, and it goes for everything that is passion and young love and forbidden and the firsts. It's when going to the movie theaters meant that that was the time that you could be alone and learn about love and learn about sensuality, and it brings back old, old memories about when maybe that had happened to me. Maybe I still blushing. Sorry, EJ. But yeah, no, this is very cool. It keeps it hot and it stays classy the whole time. And it is that young love of when things are just exactly that, passionate. And I don't know, they're in the movie theater. So yeah, no, I it brings back memories. I love it.
Thank you, Jeremy. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, first of all, I like that she has Jeremy blushing. That's pretty awesome. And great title. You know, I like the nostalgic feel that this has. I also do appreciate and enjoy that she's got that Bukowski feel with the straightforward language, the no punctuation, just write the thoughts as they flow out. A small town in rural Ohio, we sat in a compact empty theater under a cloak of cigarette smoke fog. She really brings us into the atmosphere, and you can tell she's bringing us back in time because you can't even smoke in movie theaters anymore. And there was definitely a wonderful sensuality to this, a youthful and exuberant sensuality where it's all about, you know, as she says, discovery. You know, it's all about that exploration of each other and being so into each other that you don't even care about the movie on the screen. So just an excellent write and great attention to detail and very well done.
Oh, thank you very much, Pam. And this was pretty cool. It started out with an even flow. The Dallas Cineplex, that prophet feeling against the dim streets of small town of rural Ohio. There's something that one can picture easily. The contact empty. My left hand, townsendid.co. That's where it starts to pick up a little bit of heat while my right elbow explored below your pants and developing firmness therein. Then your fingers coax my breasts from underwire shackles. A nice little touch. It kind of reads as that that teenage experience, the exploration jotted down in the diary you hope nobody will ever find. And that thought, eager mouth, completed the circuit, was a really good thought as your inquisitive digits struck gold in the discovery of wet lace. And that thought with the better show than whatever movie it was playing was also a nice touch, because it's definitely a 10 o'clock movie and it's probably weekend, so my guess would be, since it's a small rural town in Ohio, it's got to be one of those grade B black and white horror classics from the late 50s or early 60s. Something you really didn't give a shit about in the first place. But, hey, for a buck, we've got a warm place to indulge in our exploration. Nicely done, EJ. All right, Pam.
I like that you brought up the underwire bra, because I have to say, if I had any goal in life, it would be to make sure that underwire bras no longer exist. That is the one good thing I plan on contributing to society.
Pam, you've been trying to burn bras.
Getting the whalebone to torture them.
They don't all need to be burned, just the ones with wires.
Oh, that's supposed to make it harder to get inside. But no, you just lift the damn thing up and over.
Well, great comment there, Rex. And up next, we have Bird's Eye View by S. Sharp. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Bird's Eye View. There's nothing like the therapy of a bird's eye view to other people's problems to help you forget about your own. Sitting on the splintered wooden steps of the slide at Lake Hollywood Park next to the barbecues by the concrete picnic tables, watching the lady with the fuchsia-colored bathrobe half-draped open, yelling at her teenage son with the long, greasy hair, I could only hear parts. Pot screwed up and going nowhere, though, really stood out. I recognized the lady from the bank. Sex begged her participation. Normally dressed to the nines, professional, I recalled her politely smiling as she rejected my loan request. How she asked me almost sincerely, "Is there anything else I can do for you, sir?" "No," I replied. "Thank you," I replied, looking down her blouse, knowing that was why I was thanking her. Momentarily, I got distracted, not that she had finished yelling at her son, but the slamming of car doors caught my attention. The cackling sound of a female voice cut through the brisk Saturday morning air. "I don't give a damn," she assaulted her husband verbally. I assumed it was her husband by the smooth way so artistically appeared, at least to a novice of husband observation, to care sincerely. He stopped to face her, looked at her intently, softened his voice like a caressing songbird might do. He said, "Honey, whatever you would like would be fine by me." This momentarily disarmed her until the teenage girl with the flowing coal black hair pulled up from her morning jog just about 5 feet from them, huffing as her hot chest rose and fell like the emotions of the crowd at the circus when the high wire act goes awry. With her back to the couple, she bent over and placed her hands on her knees. Her vertical smile illuminated the gloomy, overcast morning. The clear outline of her thong declared its presence through her tight white spandex shorts like a roadside sign on a rural country drive might do. She tried to catch her breath, causing the man to lose his, as well as his well-rehearsed, contrived sincerity. "What the hell are you looking at?" his wife asked. "Are you looking at that girl's ass?" Now this startled the young girl, who vaulted up and threw a blind glance over her shoulder, much like the knife thrower at the magician shows in Vegas do. Yet she did it with a coy smirk on her face, which leaves me to ponder. Is it because she was offended that he would look at her like he would a magazine on the rack in the grocery store, wanting to run his fingers through the pages only to place her back where he got her from so unceremoniously? Or is it possible that she enjoys the attention and the power that a girl has over the helpless male libido? Bend over, stand up, bend over, stand up. Kind of like placing string in front of a kitten and pulling it away. I resigned myself to the former because just then she screamed back at them, "Dirty old bastard," as she strutted away. But this was like the beginning of the finale of the fireworks show on the 4th of July at the Los Angeles County Fairgrounds, because now the heavyset lady began a quick wobble after the young lioness, making me think of the profound discoveries of Newton and objects and how objects in motion, well, tend to stay in motion. She called out to the girl, "What did you call my man?" The man, who looked like a walking stick next to her, tried to stop her, but she tossed him aside as easily as her tongue seemed to deal out obscenities. "Bitch, you better stop when I'm talking to you," she announced, as she waved a hand about her head like she was shooing flies. And quite frankly, from my vantage point and the looks of her, she could have been. Just then, the girl did turn back, her eyes as wide as, well, this lady. Okay, maybe now I'm getting a little carried away. But certainly, she was quite shocked as the plump one grabbed her by the hair and started smacking her. Her husband tried to stop her as the cop car pulled up. Officers spilled out and a whole lot of them fell to the ground in a heap, arms flailing, legs flying as the show reached a crescendo. I took a deep breath, stood up, and started walking home. Yes, there is nothing like the therapy of a bird's eye view to other people's problems to help you forget about your own.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you on the bird's eye view?
Yeah, well, I thought bird's eye view was a perfect title for this poem. I have to say, I like that it's raw and it's gritty, and it shows so much of the ugliness of life. And yet, really, it has a positive message in a way, that the message of, you know, if you think you have problems, look around you. There's always somebody worse off. You know, and I like that main message, and I really like the detail put in on this. It's like the whole idea of observing, like, everything around you and everyone around you. And knowing things about them, because it's almost like, to me, the whole idea also that people don't always pay attention. Like, here the protagonist is paying attention to everyone, watching them, you know, listening to them. But obviously they're not really noticing him, you know, because, you know, maybe he's so high up or whatever. But I think sometimes people are just oblivious. Like, sometimes, I mean, you go into grocery stores and people are, like, you know, just talking at top. Like, you know, there's nothing, there's so much that they don't even are aware that people are around. They keep talking. They keep doing what they want to do. You know, they dress in those skin-colored tights. And all kinds of fun Walmartian stuff. And I really like how he takes us through his thoughts, the character's thoughts, and that he would look at her like he would a magazine on the rack in the grocery store, waiting to run his fingers through the pages, only to place her back when he got her from so unceremoniously. You know, it's that idea of some people are observers, and they notice the details that people who are closer to the situation don't notice. And I think that's an important part, is that sometimes, especially when it comes to relationships or, you know, people in general, like you can, like, I've been in this situation, and I've been the person who's watched Friends be in this situation where they're in a relationship and it's like, okay, this guy is no good or this woman is no good. You know, can't you see this? And they can't, because they're right up close to the situation. But love all the characters that he brought into this. Love the Bukowski feel. It was definitely one of those longer writes that grabbed and kept my attention the whole way through, and which is not easy to do with longer writes. I have the attention span of probably a chipmunk. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Jeremy, how about you?
Rex, I'm going to need you to timestamp this comment from Pam, because she said she's been in the situation. So I don't know if she's the bank teller or she's the jogger or she's the wife beating someone else down, but she's definitely in the situation. No, I love this. I think it's a delightful story. And I think what Scott put together was, it was a classic Shakespearean story. He starts from the beginning of the poem and telling you what the whole thing is about. He's saying that, you know what, it's the message that Pam pointed out. You look at other people's problems and realize that yours is much lesser. And he does it at the beginning and the end, very Shakespearean. And then you don't know who you're rooting for, because there's no real protagonist. There's two stories from what I gleaned in this, and I'm rooting for everybody the whole time. There's the bank teller who starts out having some very ugly problems at the beginning, and then she's very prim and proper, but the revenge is – she's prim and proper, but there's revenge in the fact that he looks at her as a sexual object, as she denies him. And then there's this whole exchange about the sexy jogger and everything that goes on. But you're not rooting for one character. You're kind of rooting for all the characters. And it's just kind of this comedy of errors. And this, it's a comic tragedy, again, like a classic Shakespearean story. So yeah, I was like Pam. I was very much engaged the whole way through. It was very enjoyable, and it makes me kind of want to go back down to L.A. and just kind of sit in the park for a little while and see what I can see. Maybe I'll find my own little muse down there. Very cool poem, Scott. Much enjoyed.
It was, but because of the language that was thrown in, this deliberate thought that works its way into this, and it all points at the you got the kid getting reamed in that first thought, and then you've got that very same lady now in the bank setting, reaming the guy with, no, you ain't getting a loan, even though she knows how she looks is the abstract in the moment, and that pleases her on two levels. Then you've got the woman giving her husband a hard time, yet the jogger comes up, and she offers up the same thought as the bank lady, as far as the smirk and that dirty old bastard, so to speak. It kind of hits on that notion of how men have been treated of the last, I don't know, 5, 10 years, 12 years of a toxic masculinity. Yet there is that angle from this that there is some serious toxic femininity out there as well. And that is something that is just as rampant and just as cruel and disheartening as what the other side claims with the other. So the disparity between the two in the moment is kind of that, but you know what? You throw that shit at me, why, you might want to take a good look at yourself before you start casting stones, because what we see these days, you guys are just as a bigger part of the root problem of the core than as we are. So it's kind kind of a bite back. And the thought with the opening closing stanza being the same, that bird's eye view of that, hey, at least I'm not emasculated yet. Because he does offer a thought down somewhere where of the husbandly angle, as though maybe he's just started being a husband or is on his way. So maybe that's the idea of the bird's eye view, kind of checking out the life and the scenery itself. Nicely done, Scott. All right, Pam.
All right. Great comments, both of you. And up next, we have Deja Voodoo by David Philip Ireland. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Dead of our night, you can crawl out of bed, but don't turn on the light. So why don't you crawl out of bed? It's close to midnight. I'll play with my dolls tonight. I've been here before. There's nothing that's new. I've been here before. You're just one of a few. Now it's all down to me, 'cause I'm so over you. Needles and pins, deja. Silent steps as you head for oblivion. Count in reverse as you glide across the floor. Ticking the clocks at Meridian. Whisper the curse as you beg me for more. I've been here before. There's nothing that's new. I've been here before. You're just one of a few. Now it's all down to me, 'cause I'm so over you. Needles and pins, deja. I've been here before. There's nothing that's new. I've been here before. You're just one of a few. Now it's all down to me, 'cause I'm so over you. Needles and pins, deja.
David, thank you for the SoundCloud.
It is very much appreciated. All right, Jeremy, why don't we kick it with you first for Deja Vu Ju?
Now, I know the three of us have never met in person, but during the course of that song, I pictured both of you individually dancing around the room to your own style to that. That was a great recording. How could you not get into that? That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And the title kind of says it all. I think it's really kind of clever, Deja Voodoo. So you've been there before, but you're getting the same pain over and over again by someone else that's controlling the needles and pins. I mean, lyrically, I got the message, but the performance in itself was very enjoyable. It kind of had that. I don't know if David's going to enjoy this, but it kind of had that Depeche Mode kind of androgynous dark dance to it. So I really I enjoyed it, got into it, but the message as well as the performance were very much enjoyed.
All right. Well said, Jeremy. Thank you. And Pam, how about you?
Well, it's wonderful to get another recording from David Ireland. I highly recommend, actually, that if you get a chance, check out his YouTube page. I think he provides some links in the comments that you can get to it. I was going through it the other day, listening to some of his music and his videos, and very cool stuff. I liked what Jeremy had to say about it. You know, the vibe that it has, the Depeche Mode kind of feel, and I thought that was really cool. A Deja Voodoo was a really great play on words, like the whole idea of allowing yourself to be casted under somebody's spell over and over again, and to be hurt by them over and over again. What I liked about this is you could have not had the music, and it makes for an excellent poem, you know, but adding the music really made it a higher level of experience. I really liked that first stanza with the mention of, so why don't you crawl out of bed? It's close to midnight and I'm playing with the dolls tonight. And that's intriguing to me, you know, that whole idea of it seems like a kind of taking turns, hurting each other, using each other, taking turns with who holds the pin. I like 10 silent steps as you head for oblivion, count in reverse as you glide across floor, ticking of clocks. I like the use of the word anti-meridian, the idea of where the earth is split between the east and the west, and so you can see there in there in that stanza an emotional split, the silence and the obliviousness that emotionally splits people. So wonderful song all the way through, and I definitely look forward to hearing more from him.
Well said. I can walk along the thing that you said, the sort of the sharing of that pain, but there's that other angle of him being so locked into particularities. He's the one playing with the pins and the needles. There's that opening phrase, you can crawl out of bed, but don't turn on the light. So why don't you crawl out of bed? It's close to midnight, and I'm playing with the dolls tonight. That angle. Then he hits on now it's all down to me because I'm still over you, needles and pins, Deja Voodoo. So he's been down this road before because he's always picking the very same woman, type of woman, maybe even hair color, eye color, whatever. But he's got a particular type that he gravitates to, and he's always with the anti-meridian angle. What was it? Ticking of clocks, anti-meridian, whisper the curse as you beg me for more. Anti-meridian, before noon.
whisper the curse as you beg me for more. But there's that angle again of adding a little bit more pain with the pins and needles. And the deja voodoo is just that constant turn of, I keep rolling back into this very same vein because I'm kind of hooked on it, almost addicted to the point of, hey, this is my turn. This is how I roll and this is how things work. So the idea of crawl out of bed, but don't turn on the light off of that little dark thought of you might not like what you see when you turn on the light. So nicely done, David. Thank you. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Your Life is Your Life, Go All the Way by Eric Svensson. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Your life is your life. Go all the way. Bravo, Uniform, Kilo Whiskey Oscar, Sierra, Kilo India. This Lion King poet still roars louder than the MGM's one. Mauled, overhauled by life, but word mechanics never failed. Growl, grunge, scowl, howl. Call a spade, a bulldozer. Soiled life experience oil, fueled a genius. Intercourse of fricatives, explosives, conjugal cadence or gradence, most often in places where angels fear to trod, hot rod, ramrod, pen pistons, pumps, typewriter keys, thumped, tarnished tarmacs, assonance disappeared between cracked asphalt, dissonant dandelions, delirious dirges dance. Your life is your life. Go all the way. Panel beat, spray, paint, buff. Lion King poet thundered beyond social security domes. Pearlescent purr of Rolls Royce. Silken cocoon traps. Constrained monarch. Butterfly wings, hit the gravel, unravel concrete blocks that bind the mind. If you go, go all the way. Your life is your life. Go all the way. Bravo, Uniform, Kilo Whiskey, Oscar, Sierra, Kilo India.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, you know, I have to say, I'm a big fan of poets that catch a vibe of a prompt, but still stay true to themselves. And I don't know if it was because I was listening to Eric's voice, but even if I wasn't, I think I would have felt this way, is that through this imagery and through his choice of words, I really get a Bukowski vibe. And yet there's a certain ways that to me he stays true to his own style, his own voice. I like all the different references to building a road, like the mention of tamaracks. And to me, there's that message of that journey that you take in life where you create your own roads. You don't follow roads already made. And that includes for writing, you know, use your own voice. Don't follow other people's voices. I did really like hot rod, ramrod, pen, pistons, pump, typewriter, keys, thumped, tarnished, tamaracks, assassins, disappear between cracked asphalt, dissonant dandelions, delirious dirges danced. There's such an idea of almost like this, that getting drunk, getting high, getting, you know, the maybe even just the high of writing, and hit the gravel, unravel concrete blocks that binds the mind. If you go all the way, I really love the whole idea of hitting the gravel. You know, don't stay on the main road. Go on that gravel. Take that bumpy ride, you know, and open your mind's eye. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Oh, thank you very much, Diane. And Jeremy, how about you?
Almost missed the acrostic nod there at the beginning of Anna Bukowski, but I'm glad I finally caught on to that. And, you know what's really cool? What I really got drawn into about the beat poets, especially Ginsberg, is how they just let it go. And the best example, the easiest example, is Howell, and how he just writes words, and you get into the groove of those words, and you get into the groove of the spirit that someone is really loving what they're laying down. And you can kind of not fully understand every single word, but it's the mood that gets you in that groove. Another example would be Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. I mean, it's just this crazy celebration of sound and fun. I think Eric went further, because I think Eric puts a lot of intelligence in his write. And I think even though he's playing a lot with words and metaphor, he carried a lot of that throughout in this. He has some themes in here that he carried and stayed true to. He stayed true to the Lion King kind of feel. He also stayed true to this hot rod theme that he kept throughout the whole poem. But it helped the fact that he also emboldened his ultimate message. I think Pam hit on all those notes. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that he really accentuated what his message was, but I was still already there. I was in the spirit of this thing, and sometimes you can just kind of get into the groove, and the fact that he punctuates it, it helps for sure, but I'm already there, buddy. I really enjoyed the write the whole way through.
Excellent. I caught the phonetics for the name, too, although he did interchange two. That should be a Bravo Uniform Kilo Oscar Whiskey.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
I was wondering if that might have been on purpose, just for the fact that this comes out. This is an homage to Bukowski, and he runs on that thought. The scowl howl. Yeah, you caught that angle, which was nice. Call a spade a bulldozer, and that sort of the idea of shoveling so much shit that it kind of slaps somebody upside the head. Stored life experience, oil, fueled a genius. And that second stanza was really, really good, because he throws in the whoring attitude that Bukowski threw in a lot of his pieces. Intercourse with fricatives, explosives, conjugal cadence, thought radiance. There he throws in the act of talking about anatomies and what he liked to do. And then again, throwing in hot rod, ramrod, pen pistons, pump. That whole thing walks on the double-toned voice of all of those hard-edged pieces where he's talking about screwing or fucking or sourcing and fucking or whatever he put voice to it, and how he explained what was going on in the very moment. I like to thought with the dissonant dandelion, the delirious dirges dance. There's all of that plays right off that the hard language he brought in a lot of his pieces. And then again, your life is your life. Go all the way. Again, that sort of hey, you're gonna go. You might as well go all in and have fun at it, which is where this goes. I mean, hit the gravel, unravel concrete blocks that bind the mind. Again, the thought and honesty of going with the pose of hey. You see what you see within the mind, and you let it flow out. It's like that quote, throw up all over your typewriter in the morning, clean it up at noon. There's that idea. And this is
kind of hits on that notion of a celebration of boot camp. Nicely done, Eric. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Taking Life for Granted, A Rewrite of Gambler's All by Bukowski by Diane D. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Taking Life for Granted, A Rewrite of Gambler's All by Bukowski. I breathe as if turning on a water tap, like I always know it's going to come out. I drive the freeway as if there are no exits, and my 2007 Crown Victoria runs on Rogers Wi-Fi. I wake up every day shocked with a decent attempt to show gratitude. I never expect to see anyone but me in the mirror, but one day I saw her. With eyes shut, everything is black. I blink. I blink cocky and I blink brash. I blink cocksure that I will see light. Every day is a journey, but I treat it like a destination, a place to stop and end. As if lying down to sleep every night is the reward for doing another 24. So what is it called, waking up every new day? A journey with no destination? A tumbleweed, rolling only if there's wind. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, this one's for you to start with.
All right. It's interesting. I'm just curious if a rewrite is actually a type of a poem, because I wonder what's the difference between a rewrite and, you know, just being influenced by a poem. But I was listening to hers and reading hers at the same time. I was trying to glance through the Bukowski poem because it was one I had never read before. And I think hers was a great reflection of the prompt. And what I like about it is it felt like an answer, you know, like the Bukowski poem was talking in you do this, sometimes you do this. And it, you know, with her poem, it's the I, it's that first person narrative that really brings you into the character's world. I like that she starts stanza one with I breathe and stanza two is I blink. I wake up every day shocked with a decent attempt to show gratitude. I never expect to see anyone but me in the mirror, but one day I saw her with eyes shut. Everything is black. You know, that idea of not recognizing yourself. You know, and I like the raw honesty of a decent attempt to show gratitude. Like, you want to be thankful for life, but sometimes it's hard to be difficult for a shit show. Just to me, a strong write all the way through. I really liked that end line, the tumbleweed rolling only if there's wind. That could be a contest prompt, that line alone. So just excellent writing, very well done.
Well said, Pam, thank you. And Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, sorry, my comments are going to be lame because I agree with exactly everything of what Pam just said. I think that having a rewrite of someone is exactly that. I think that what Diane did is she got into the spirit of this, and to call it a rewrite is, it is a rewrite because she got into the spirit of another person's poem. And I mean, it's the ultimate compliment to what Buko does, is to take something that someone's already created and kind of mix their spirit around a little bit and make it their own. And Diane's been around with us, and she's spry enough to know exactly what she's doing. And I think she captured the spirit of the original 100%. And what I love so much, I mean, I'm a huge Bukowski fan, and I like how he makes everything so gritty, and he makes it so personal, so autobiographical. And I think Diane did that in this poem. I think what Pam said, again, was the I and making this very autobiographical makes you feel like Diane experienced this exact moment. My favorite line, my 2007 Crown Vic, runs on Roger's Wi-Fi. That was so exacting. That's when the turn of the poem said, okay, Diane is in this moment. She's being specific, and I felt it. It was really cool. And then again, to echo what Pam said, those last couple lines, a tumbleweed rolling off only if there's wind, that was a special touch. That was something that I don't even think Bucco does on a lot of his poems, where I think Diane took this and made it more metaphorical and poetic, where Bucco was a lot more literal and harsh with his poems, which has its merit, but I like the fact that she kind of took this to a different level for me with that closing.
Nice. I'm going to hit on the same vein. I like the metaphor opening up. I breathe as if turning on a water tap, like I always know it's going to come out. That's an ease of thought, and the metaphor runs well with that. And I think the two end lines are the most important ones because I never expect to see anyone but me in the mirror, but one day I saw her. With eyes shut, everything is black. So there's that notion, looking in the mirror that day, that particular morning, he doesn't really see himself, he sees her. But if he closes his eyes, he doesn't. Then you follow down to the next one. She opens up the next stanza. I blink cocky, I blink brash, I blink cocksure, but I will see the light. There is that notion right there. The darkness is gone in the moment. Cocky, brash, cocksure. There's a moment of testosterone-fueled imagination. It's the journey. Every day is a journey, but I treat it like a destination, a place to stop and end, as if lying down to sleep every night is the reward for doing another 24. But there's that note of running the day full out, as if it might be the last. So what is it called, waking up every new day? A journey with no destination. And that thought, a tumbleweed rolling only if there's wind, that need of being moved by something. And I think that up top here in the mirror, but one day I saw her, that was what got him moving to start the second stanza, the cocky, the brash, the cocksure. And now you finish off that stanza with the thought of, hey, I'm going to be still in the moment until it moves me once more. Nicely done, Diane. All right, Pam, what we got next?
All right. Up next, we have Walking by Anton Ansford, 37. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Walking by Anton Ansford, 37. I remember thinking, I wish I could write. Went up to famous artist X's place. He offered me a joint. Famous poet is Y. Walked in topless, said, God. But then I remembered reading the newspaper with a huge obituary of Giovanni Intra. We used to do primal screens in our kitchen. And then, unbeknownst to us, up sticks to New York, become a disciple of Baudrillard. Or the award-winning composer used to randomly take off her top and complain about the heat before lying back and letting us suck her nipples. I think both David Lodge and Umberto Eco talk about how every generation feels it has somehow missed out. Anyway, I used to wish I could write today. Woke up with the twins naked next to me. Walked up K Road, saw Ron painting, Marissa modeling, which was strange, as the painting was called Sardines on Rye. Now I just wish I could walk. And boom.
Jeremy, you get the lead on this one.
Great read, Rex. Yeah, this has all the bohemian feel of some kind of New York flat somewhere where the artists just let their freak flag fly and become artists. I really, really, really in love the part where it says who used to do primal screams in our kitchen. Because, yeah, I mean, that's where art is created, where people just are unbridled to suck on nipples and paint and be crazy and enjoy and explore and be free. And the whole walking part of it, I mean, it kind of has that sexual undertone of the whole thing. I don't need to expand upon that. But I really enjoy the whole unbridled feel of the entire piece of it and just being free and enjoying art for what art is. Damn be anybody else that wants to be a critic of it all. It is being in that moment and being free and exploring, I guess is the best way to put it.
Nice. Thank you, Jeremy. Pam, all about you.
Yeah, I like this. I did get distracted looking at, sardine art because I couldn't resist looking to see if there's actually a painting titled Sardine on Rye. I did like, and I have to agree with Jeremy, that it does have that whole bohemian feel or that idea of somebody who wants to live that life, who longs for that lifestyle. I like how the reality smacks them. You know, he offered me a joint, famous poetess, he walked in topless, said, God, I need a fuck. But then I remember reading the newspaper, a huge obituary of Giovanni Intra, who used to do primal screams in our kitchen. And it's the whole idea of maybe I'm thinking what life once was and now, like, the aches and pains of age make it something different. Great play with words. I like that he brought up the names. I don't actually know who David Lodge and Umberto Eco are. I probably should. And I'm sure they're probably like famous artists or poets or something, and I really need to Google them. But I really like where he says that, oh man, I can't find it. Something about like every generation feels like it's missing out. I might be paraphrasing because I can't find it. It was actually right below what I was mentioning about how every generation feels it has somehow missed out. Now, I do have to say in some ways, this latest generation, I think that's a possibility because of how much time they spend on the internet. But, you know, I think it's true, like, for many generations, you know, like, you know, what, you know, like, you know, parents or grandparents who got the opportunity to go to Woodstock, you know, or maybe somebody has a parent or grandparent that had the opportunity to listen to Ginsberg read Howl for the first time. I mean, can you imagine being there? That would be such a dynamic and awesome moment. But, you know, I think the mentioning of the sardines on rye painting is the whole idea that we're just all being so packed together in this, like, awkwardness of conformity. So excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, you guys. I got the very distinct thought of a 60s New York, Greenwich Village. You've got what's his name running his little what the hell do you call it? The factory. Everybody and anybody. They all lived in the village at that time. It was the artist's place as well as the poet's factory where everybody went to delve into the bohemian lifestyle. And he plays on this angle quite well. I like that there is that thought that the award-winning composer used to randomly take off her top and complain about the heat before lying back and letting us tuck her nipple. And the thought with David Lodge and Umberto Eco. Eco was an Italian novelist, medievalist, and literary critic. David Lodge was is also a media critic, but an essayist and a writer. And I guess the commentary there was the sort of brief discussions about how each generation comes up on that phase of, somehow we've missed on something. And this walks as a step back to those days when things that weren't mainstream were just coming up, and there was this special realm where you could actually go and visit in on that angle, the sort of the coffee strips, the beat poets. Everything was walking around in that realm. The fact that you could walk down one street and you end up seeing Ron painting, Marissa modeling, and have it called Sardines on Rye, and then to finish off, now I just wish I could walk. You kind of hit on that notion of age is set in, and he can't do the things that he used to love to do, which was travel from here to here to here and see the doings, the goings-on, the thrill of the city life at that period in time. Thank you, Anton. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right. Very cool comment there, Rex. All right. Up next we have How to Win at Gambling by Leif Van Amsterdam. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
You bet. How to Win at Gambling by Leif Van Amsterdam. We smoke the weed, speak deep, and know stuff. LSD also helped our minds to open up. Some like the taste of speed, just a little too much. Heroin is its own trip to keep you out of touch. Mushies brought the laughter like your first puff. Ice keeps you limp when all you want to do is fuck. Valium takes the edge off, so life ain't so tough. Ecstasy seems to float, and you can't get enough. Crack is another level, but the withdrawal is tough. The needle? That's Russian roulette, and that's nuts. End poem.
Thank you, Jeremy. All right, Pam, what do you think? Or should I do the first end of it?
Well, if you want to comment first, go ahead, but I can comment. That's fine. I mean, I haven't had...
I think the first two lines are the imperative, the note that hits everything else and shudders to think that anybody else walked the rest of what comes down after that. We smoke the weed, speak deep, and know stuff. LSD also helped our minds to open up. Now, the thought of everything else, the speed, the heroin, the mushies, the ice, Valium, ecstasy, crack, and the needle. I like that last line. It has a nice touch of that's Russian roulette, and that's not, there's a little bit of humor in that, dark humor at that. But the thought of everything else past those first two lines is a death sentence, something you don't want that. How about you?
Well, first of all, very cool comment there, Rex. I did like the dark humor in the end line. You know, I honestly thought about asking Jeremy if reading the word fuck would, you know, affect his delicate sensibilities. But then I thought, well, if he had delicate sensibilities.
That one word he had
up front, it rolled right off the tongue. It rolled right off the tongue, Pam.
It did. I figured if you had delicate sensibilities, you wouldn't be calling into After Midnight with me and Rex. So, you know. But, yeah, I really like how he says a lot in a brevity. And, he, you know, the first couple lines, as you mentioned, Rex, the whole idea of, you know, here's the things you do to get the mind open and, you know, to just really think deep. I love it. I had to smile at him calling mushrooms mushies. At least I assume that's what that is. Mushies brought on laughter like your first puff. Ice keeps you limp when all you want to do is fuck. Valium takes off the edge, so life isn't so tough. That one's very relatable. Like, there are times in my life that if somebody had handed me a Valium, I probably would have taken it. You know, the only thing I've ever tried is pot. Everything else I definitely have steered away from. And the whole idea, like, I like that he did bring up the idea that it's just plain crazy to share needles, you know, and you're gambling with your life. So, great end rhyme, clever and very well done.
Well, thank you, Dan. All right, Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, I'm definitely making air quotes when you say, Pam, if someone ever would have possibly offered me a Valium. Right, Pam. Right. No, it's a fun poem.
Valiums are a tinker toys.
Exactly. No, it's a fun poem, and I like how it's framed with how to win in gambling. But you know what? When you look at it, it's not much of a cautionary tale. It offers a caution on the third when some people like speed a little bit too much because speed kills, right? And then the needle, that's Russian roulette, and that's nuts at the end. But it kind of glorifies the rest of it. I mean, crack is another level, but it's a tough with the withdrawals, but you're still not talked away from it. So it's kind of an inviting gamble. Everyone's got to know their own limits, but for this, for someone who's played and dabbled in a lot of this stuff, it is a gamble, but it's kind of fun, and it kind of doesn't shy me away from any of it. So I like that there's this sense of knowing. It comes from an experienced voice, and how to win at gambling says, again, it's inviting the ride, which, all right, I can support that.
Well said. Yeah, I'll buy down to that because there are some things in here that I would never go near. The needle, couldn't go that far, and I wasn't looking to do one of two things, taking heroin, which was puke or shit your pants, because you know what? And then nod off into oblivion? That's not a good high. that's just the strangest angle of things. And I couldn't cotton on speed. Didn't like it. But, hey, what though? Quaaludes and the little red bullets, they were cool. Way back in the day. All right, where are we going next?
All right, great comments. All right, up next we have I Drink Deeply, Buck-inspired poetry 110 by Soliloquy. And it goes like this. On every occasion, I fix my thoughts on the finer things in life. I salute the illusion of love and its cold demise, thanking the door she ran out of. Turning my bottle of rye up in warm salutation, I drink to Avalon and those pious gods left for death. I become the sunken shadows in this empty room, watching the sickening symphony of love in bloom, while the little plastic people hurry past my window, searching for something I have already found and thrown to the dogs. I drink deeply to sleep for the dreams that might awake me. Perhaps they will take me far from this drunken days. End poem.
Jeremy, Pam. All right, Jeremy, we're going to start with you.
Definitely Buko inspired, and I like the fact that it has a softer feel to it. I think Soliloquy gives his own touch to the attitude and the feel that Buko seemed to live in his life through his poetry, I guess. There are a couple lines that I really, really enjoyed. Let me see if I can find them again. Thanking the door she ran out of, I thought was a really cool touch. And I also liked in the second, I drank to Avalon and those pious gods left for death. It has the feel of everything that I think that Bukowski created in all of his poetry. But again, to reiterate what I already said, I think it has a lighter touch to it. What Bukowski and what I've always taken from his poetry was just that harsh, raw, dark feel. Gritty is the best way to describe it. And this is more, it has the same attitude and it has the same affinity for the lifestyle, but with a different personal twist. And so I can appreciate what Soliloquy did for that in that regard.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeremy. All right, Pam, your turn for Soliloquy.
All right. Well, I really enjoy Soliloquy's writing. He is so great when it comes to brevity. And I do like that this is, it has that softer feel to it. I'm turning my bottle of rye up in warm salutations. I drink to Avalon and those pious gods left for death. To me, I just really like the idea of somebody who raises their bottle to that idea of piety dying. Just there's a certain rawness to that. I also like that he writes in a way that you can tell he's inspired by Bukowski, because he writes about love that is lost, love that has hurt you, and the idea of wanting to escape to the pain. Also, and I believe, and I could be wrong, but isn't one of Bukowski's books or poems something to do with throwing something to the dogs, if I remember right? I feel like I have already found, and searching for something I have already found and thrown to the dogs is a really great nod to Bukowski. An excellent write and very well done.
Well, shit. You guys ate up all the good stuff. I ain't got nothing left.
Oh, you can find something. You always do.
Like Jeremy, I did like that first stanza, saluting the illusion of love, its cold demise, and thanking the door she ran out. A great thought there. The Avalon and those pious gods left for death also. Wonderful. And then that touch of darkness in the third one. I become the sunken shadows in this empty room, watching the sickening symphony of love in bloom. And then that thought, the little plastic people hurry past my window searching for something I've already found and thrown to the dogs. There's knowledge in that. And the thought of I drink deeply to sleep for the dreams that might await me. Perhaps they will take me afar from this drunken days. The thought of that notion, sleeping deep for those dreams that might occur. So more thought, more abstract, more idiosyncratic normalization of that which is seen can be put forth a bit more. So the idea of, I might not be seeing it outside my window because I've already thrown that shit to the dogs. Hey, let's see what a dream might illuminate the mind and think. So I found this one fascinating, and it's 8 years old, so nice piece. Thank you, Soliloquy.
Absolutely. Boy, yeah. Great comment, Rex. All right.
Yes,
so great
yeah,
show
no,
tonight,
great show,
Rex.
Pam. We're at the back end of things. So
9 carryovers for next week.
Oh, okay. Yes, we will be. Yes, we'll start next week with these, finishing off this piece of Bukowski. So that's a great start.
Absolutely.
Oh, Jeremy, thank you for coming on board. Had some great fun, as well as your introduction. Still laughing about that one.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that was... That's a classic April Fool's joke if I ever heard one.
Oh, my God.
And
EJ,
thank you for hanging on the board. Hey, you know what, Jeremy? That right Pam mentioned on for Dex, it might just start off with that April Fool's joke you pulled for the show as a point of note.
I like that. I like that thought. I gotta put something together for sure.
Kind of a roast and toast memento more.
Anything to keep her on her toes.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. You two are definitely good about keeping me on my toes. That's for sure. But
all right,
always awesome hanging out with both of you.
All right, since we're at the back end of things, it's time for us to bid goodnight. EJ, thank you for hanging out on the boards for us. And you too. I had a lot of fun tonight and some laughs as well as some dark thoughts in tonight. So, and some very interesting. I like the, Mad Lads piece with the Sanskrit language just kind of thrown in there as well as having a couple of straight words in that one piece. I had to stop. I scrolled right past that one section and had to go back. So, shit, I forgot the words. They're in there. All right.
Well,
good night.
It happens to the best of us. Good night.
Yeah.